Hello, it is May 12th, 2014. This is episode 415 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports Unearthed. Today's death, Adam Petty, who died May 12th, 2000. The son of Kyle Petty and the grandson of Richard, he was the first fourth-generation NASCAR driver in history. Not even 20 years old, he was best friends with Dale Earnhardt Jr., and his favorite TV show was South Park. While practicing for the Busch 200 race in Loudon, New Hampshire, Petty's car brushed the wall in turn three, spun, and smashed into the wall. He was killed instantly with a skull fracture. He was 19 years old. Today, he would only be 33. Here in Boston, though, it is merely Monday. I'm Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I am in Boston for only a game, the NPR, the great NPR weekend. Not only weekend, but in the NPR show, only a game turns 20 years old. Today, this week, sometime, I'm not sure exactly when. Sometime in this general area of they found the DC schedule. And they asked me to come out and and be on their show, I guess, their 20th anniversary show. So that's why I'm in Boston. I know as a regular listener to the show, you're like, why, you know, would these broadcasting professionals ask the stuttering, crazy, fast-talking guy to be on? And I do not have an answer for you other than the fact that they probably couldn't get Bissinger and they wanted to talk about the media of the last 20 years. That's why I'm in Boston. I'll be there today and tomorrow, but I'll be back in Athens on Wednesday. But then I don't have to go anywhere for a while. So, anyway, obviously, the big news from the weekend was Michael Sam. It looked for a long time that he was not going to be drafted. It turned out he was. And then there was a really quite amazing reaction video that the ESPN showed. And it was certainly something that I think we'll be talking about for a long, long time. And I'm very delighted to have as my guest today, Sid Ziegler. He's the founder of OutSports. He's been a guest on this podcast before. And we are going to talk about where all this has been, where it is now, and where it's going. All right, Sid, first off, thank you for joining me on what I can imagine has been an action-packed weekend.
You could say that. I'll tell you this much. I felt like I rode on a roller coaster, that's for sure.
Yeah, so now, first thing I wanted to ask is, you know, you, of course, were pretty instrumental in the announcement back in February. I've always felt really bad about that, by the way, because I feel like I'm an okay journalist. But, you know, I was in Sochi at the time covering the same event as John Branch. So I was just like, oh, for crying out loud. This story that everyone's been trying to get for years and years and years. Not only does he have it, but he's covering slope style like an hour later, like it's nothing. I was very annoyed. He's a very nice man, and he's very good at what he does. And I was very annoyed. But
we hate him.
Yeah, of course, exactly. What a jerk. And he's handsome. Anyway, my point is that, like, you know, you were somewhat instrumental in helping that happen. So I'm curious, have you talked to Michael Sam since he's been drafted?
I just texted with him briefly. Okay. He has far more important things to do than talk to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, come on. You were there. I mean, like, you had a lot to do. I think with very smartly orchestrating kind of the rollout on this stuff initially. So, you know, it's not that unreasonable that you guys.
He and I texted briefly yesterday, but he's off in Las Vegas celebrating his last day before the dreaded camp.
Exactly. It's like the last day before someone after they get drafted into the military before boot camp.
For a seventh round rookie, I'd say that's about right.
Yeah, exactly. So so I'm curious. So, like, now you, I was following a lot of you on Twitter on Sunday. I think you were going through what a lot of us were going through, which was, you know, wait, he's really not going to get picked. Is this really going to happen? How nervous were you first off, going into the day Sunday, did you think he was going to be drafted?
Oh, I knew he was going to be drafted. I knew he was going to be drafted.
But you weren't nervous. You weren't nervous by the beginning of the seventh round.
No. Well, no. By the beginning of the seventh, I would say there were about 30 picks left, I started writing the Michael Sam didn't get drafted
right
column. which I'm thinking about publishing, actually, because within 20 picks I finished it, and then he got picked.
Right.
So it's actually I want to go back and look at it and see if it's interesting to publish now.
Like deleted scenes.
This is what we would have been saying if he hadn't gotten drafted.
So now it's funny because one of the things I thought was funny too is you mentioned, and I noticed this as well on ESPN's coverage when Shelly Smith was reporting from the bar, and she said, they're all hopeful he's drafted, but if not, and I was like, wait, I don't know. And then you pointed that out on Twitter too. They're like, it did feel, even as the day go along, I confess, I spent most of the seventh round a little depressed and even starting to get a little angry because it really, I have to say, it really felt important that he be drafted, and I think we saw when he was drafted just why that was so important.
Yeah, I was disappointed. She really messed up the coverage of that going to a gay bar. I mean, first she tweets out a photo that's of a bunch of guys in wigs with dresses on, and by the way, so when they cut to the live shot later, there were clearly tons of guys. In fact, most of them were just dressed as guys, yet she felt the need to focus on the ones with wigs and dresses. And then she goes and says that the gay community doesn't really care if he's drafted. They're just happy to be in the conversation. Like, look at these cute little gays. Like, we're talking about them. It was just so poorly done. I was surprised.
Yeah, and it was funny because you mentioned that on Twitter, I don't follow her on Twitter, so I didn't see that picture that she put up. But I definitely did have that thought that, like, and I wondered if that spin was starting to come in. And it reminded me, because I wrote a column earlier last week about how one of the things that's been really surprising to me in this process, not surprising is maybe not the wrong word, but I feel like had not been noted enough, was how, the he's not good enough to get drafted thing seemed to almost be this weirdly, secured narrative there toward the end. It went from, okay, he's not a first round guy. He's not a first or second round guy, but this is obviously a guy that's drafted, to, okay, we're looking third to seventh, to fifth, to it's 50-50 if it gets drafted, to ultimately, well, this guy thinks he's going to get drafted. What's the big deal? And it was funny, and I couldn't tell how much of that was I don't know if it even matters really, how much of it was the NFL being afraid of distraction, or how much it was homophobia, or how much was it just, NFL people pretending like they know everything. because I sense a lot of that too from a lot of NFL people. When you ask them about it, they're like, well, if you think it's homophobia because he wasn't drafted, you just don't know football. And I sense that was like their cover for it in a lot of ways.
Hey, Bill Pulley, and I was going back and forth between ESPN and NFL Network, and I watched a little more ESPN because I knew they had a camera on Michael, and I wanted to be sure of watching that when he was drafted. Bill Polian, it was interesting to hear his narrative become, this is just not the time when you draft a guy like Michael Sam at the end of the seventh round. You're looking for guys with good numbers, and you leave the Michael Sams for free agency. Well, he got that wrong.
Right.
And at one point he said, I know a lot of you new people watching this don't really know football, but it was like, really?
Right.
Wow. Did he just say that gay people don't know football?
Right.
I'm pretty sure he just said that. It was a little dismissive of him, though I appreciate his commentary usually.
Yeah, and I do. It's funny because there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, and I think I felt like that was the way, as I said before, like that was the way they disguised it a little bit. The idea, like, well, the casual fan. The casual, like if you throw out the he was SEC Defensive Player of the Year, as that just means you haven't watched the tape. And so on, and it's funny. So I'm curious because I actually had stepped away right before he was announced, before the actual pick was announced. Were you watching live then? Like when the name was announced, did you know?
Oh, yeah.
Did you sense it was coming? What was the actual moment for that?
Well, I would say so there were some picks that I was watching in particular in the seventh round. The Patriots and the Cowboys had a couple, and the Bears. I can't remember who it was. But anyhow, a couple picks before the Rams had two picks, I said, that was with Howard Bragman watching the draft, and Bragman is Michael's publicist. I said, you know, the Rams have two consecutive picks. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. And then when, as soon as they cut to the podium, I said, this is it. He's going to St. Yeah. Louis. Because they had not, except for maybe one other pick in three rounds, had anybody walk out to the podium. And so it was, I don't know, we just jumped up and down screaming, and then we started crying and hugging. And it was, oh my God, it was, because we assumed he wasn't getting drafted. We thought it was a done deal.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. That's why I said earlier, because of course I thought the same thing. I thought, okay, I think going in on Sunday, I thought this guy's, if he doesn't get drafted, I feel like it's inexcusable. And by the time it got that late, I mean, we were, 10 picks away? It was getting close by then. Do you think, and I want to get to the moment that ESPN captured in a second, but do you think there would have been, if he would have not been drafted, but the Rams or someone else calls him at the end of the draft and says, okay, we'd like to sign you, obviously that moment's not captured on television, but would you have been angry personally? Would that have angered you? Or I know it would have been less of a moment just because there wouldn't have been up to do that, but would you have been angry about it, or would that have mattered as much?
I don't know if angry is the word, but it would have been problematic, because when you talk to the players, they know the value of the draft. They know the statement that teams make, saying we want you and we don't want anybody else to have access to you. 32 teams use 256 picks to not select the gay SEC co-defensive player of the year and leader in the SEC in sacks. That would have been a big, big problem. And people who don't know football, or even know football, at a casual level, would have never understood it. So it was, and the NFL knew that, and frankly, I think probably the team owners knew that. I still maintain he was going to get drafted, because I believe that there was at least a conversation among some owners and NFL executives that cannot happen. We cannot let him go through this draft without being picked.
Now, do you think, because as I argued in my piece, I think you have to really be pretty in the tank for to be one. Do you have to be a protect the shield person? I'll put it that way. To argue that he didn't fall because of this. I'm curious, in your personal opinion, and as a sports fan, do you think he fell more because he was gay, or do you think he fell more because he was out? Do you think if this would have been an open thing that had come out in interviews and so on, the way that a lot of people knew it on the Missouri campus, but no one, I guess my question is, do you think the reason he fell were people were afraid of the distraction idea, or do you think it was specifically because he was gay, in your opinion?
Well, I know that when we talked about when he would come out, back in February or January, Michael said he wanted to do it before the draft, because he wanted to go to a team that wanted him for everything that he was. And I remember saying that was smart, because some of the teams already knew. And if they already knew and they thought they were going to be drafting somebody who was going to come out after they drafted him, that would have been a media circus, the dreaded media circus. And it would have been that much closer to OTAs and training camp. And I think that coming out protected him at some level. I think it generally protects athletes. But it's hard to argue that at some level him coming out didn't hurt his draft stock. If for no other reason than, he came out 2 weeks before the combine and then performed badly at the combine. Yeah. Certainly below expectation. But he looked distracted at the combine. And so if nothing else, his numbers were just worse at the combine, I think, because he'd come out.
And as I mentioned in the piece too, it was weird. That kind of ran into the narrative too, because then everyone ignored the pro day where the numbers were really good again, or at least not.
They were better.
Yeah, they were better. Exactly. They were at least average or slightly below, as opposed to the bad combine numbers. But again, nobody wanted to mention that. Now I really feel like obviously the moment that ESPN showed, I'm curious. Not in the moment, but the whole thing was just. It's funny how, there was a part of me that felt wrong for, I felt like I was intruding on an intensely private moment, which is, of course, is what I think a lot of great television is, is to capture
exactly.
really like personal moments where there is no, you know, there's no disguising of how important the moment is for the people involved. When you watch that, knowing, you know, I don't know Michael Sam personally, so, you know, I mean, I'm affected by what's happening, but I'm also looking like, wow, this is going to be a big culture. This is going to be a big moment. People are going to be talking about this for a long time. I'm curious your reactions when they cut to that and while you were watching.
I took out my phone and took a picture of it and threw it up online because I knew that ESPN had just shown. Yeah. A gay NFL draftee kissing his boyfriend once and twice and three times on the lips. There was no question that it was going to be, to me, that it was going to be a big story and controversial. And to an extent, I mean, listening to sports radio today, there were more people talking about the kiss than the draft pick.
People
were all up in arms about it. I mean, you know, talking about guys calling in, you know, that ruined my... moment with my son, and, you know, I shouldn't have to talk to him about being gay if I don't want to. And it was unbelievable. I think, I mean, the ESPN folks doing it on purpose.
And I have to say, I that was not, it's funny because, you know, years of watching not just sports television and not just ESPN, but regular, like the couple on Modern Family didn't kiss until like the third season and so on. Like years of watching television, like instinctively you're watching like, oh wow, like, and then you're like, wait a second, I've seen tons of guys kiss, and I think that's what's really funny is that idea that just the context of it and the number of people. And it's fine because, and this leads into something that I think you and I talked about last time. And I was a few people listened to the interview and thought I was maybe too optimistic long term on a lot of this stuff. Because for me, you know, I mean, as you've seen, as everyone's seen numbers throughout the years, generally speaking, acceptance of gays, being pro gay marriage, it increases. The one thing that makes it that number go up is when people know gay people. It's the number that one thing that makes that number go up. So it's funny. So for me, like, do you is the contrast with, wow, this was the NFL draft coverage and now there's this and this freaks out. Not very many people, by the way, like a lot of people, but not very many people publicly. And I want to talk about that as well. But also that contrast with that, or just the notion of what. Of what it means in a larger sense, like can you separate that or not?
Can I separate what it? I don't know what.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay, I went down one road with the question and went down another way. Let's start over. Basically, what I'm saying is, when a moment like that's happening and you know the people involved, did you cheer when that happened, or were you shocked? What was it? Both of them? Like, did you feel like when you saw it, were you like, oh, this is going to piss off my
kids? So here's the thing. I see gay men kiss all the time. All the time.
Right.
I kiss my partner all the time. They're probably not as much as he wants me to. So it doesn't even faze me. Like, it doesn't cross my mind.
Right.
So when I saw it, it really didn't, I don't think, register until they cut away to the guys in the Radio City Music Hall, and they started talking about the moment. And I said, oh, yeah, right. That was a big moment right there.
Yeah.
ESPN didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And so then I rewound it and took pictures and started posting about it. But for me, you know, people talk about what's normal and what's not normal. For me, two men kissing or holding hands is so... it doesn't even faze me. Like, I don't even see it almost. It's so commonplace.
But I say, and that to me is one of the things I really actually respect about ESPN for not just showing it, but repeating it throughout the day as a very common image. It's on the cover of the New York Post this morning, for crying out loud. Like, that, to me, that's what I mean about when people talk about when they the thing that makes numbers go up is when they know gay people. The more, like, there were probably a lot of people, that's the probably hundreds of thousands of people, that was the first time they had ever seen two gay men piss. Gay men kiss.
Millions.
Yeah, and not even people that would even have any issue, but just literally it's maybe the first time they've ever actually seen it. To me, that notion, regardless of just the context, that's the NFL draft and that it's football and so on. To me, that seems like a huge, huge thing. And I'm wondering, do you think Michael and Vito, I think Vito is his name, do you think, yeah. And he's an athlete as well. He was a swimmer at Missouri, I believe.
Exactly.
And do you think they you don't really plan a kiss like that, but do you think that they understood, if you were in that situation, would you understand the context of it, or would you be just kind of the way you were, where you're like, yeah, I see this crap all the time?
Those guys, I think that, to me, what was beautiful about that, it was just so genuine. It was, you saw just two men who clearly loved each other, and they had no idea in that moment that there were cameras there, that the agents were there, that friends or family were there. In that moment, it was just the two of them just expressing incredible relief, because they thought he was going to go a lot sooner, and they suddenly thought that he wasn't get drafted. So they had been resigned that he was not going to get drafted, and what do we do next? And for that to happen, it was just sincere emotion to come pouring out.
Now, one discussion that we had last time, and again, as I was saying, I had some people that thought I was maybe too optimistic about these things. To me, I tend to fall on the side of, you know what, history wins out. And the fact is, history's clearly bending in the direction of this not being an issue in 20 years, and people finding it ridiculous. And I think it was worth noting that, you know, I always note about how even when John Amici wrote his book, even then LeBron James had some quote about, I wouldn't want my teammate lying to me, so on. Something that if he said today, he would be excoriated for. And I think that speaks well for how quickly things have moved. So I tend to be like way too optimistic about this stuff and be like, okay, listen, look at anyone that says something stupid about this. And there were a few people that did, have been pointed out and called morons by the vast majority of people. So therefore, I find myself like, all right, here we go. We're moving in the right direction again. And the thing that worried me about the fear that Sam wasn't going to be drafted is that was wrong. and that things aren't moving as quickly as I think they are. I'm curious. Is there a danger of people patting themselves on the back too much after a moment like this, that when you see the positivity, or should we just kind of not worry about that and enjoy it?
An NFL team drafted an openly gay player. I don't care if it was Mr. Irrelevant or the first pick. Deemed impossible. Moments before it happened, I had people tweeting me, see, I told you, the NFL is a horrible place, it hates gay people. And in one fell swoop, the dialogue changed. And I believe that it changed to reality. I believe that the NFL is a place that will welcome a gay athlete. And certainly there might be teams that are less equipped to deal with the negative reactions of particular teammates or front office executives, but the NFL, by and large, is a place where gay people can exist and participate and thrive. And I think that finally, that's finally the narrative we have after years of saying this. It's finally what we're talking about.
Which leads me to my next question. The last time I had you on, it was right after Jason Collins. I asked you if that was the biggest moment, because you've been covering this for years and years and years. And I mean, I'm not implying that you're old. You've just been covering it for a while. You're an experienced journalist. I have this. People said that to me.
I can't be much older than you.
That's what I'm saying. No, I'm 38. You're like, I think you're like, what, a year older, 2 years older than me? You're not much older than me.
I'm 40.
Yeah, so, but that's, no, I was thinking that because someone the other day said, well, you've been writing on the internet forever. And I was like, hey, wait a second. Wait, okay, I probably have. I'm experienced. I'm not old. But I asked you when Collins happened, if that was the biggest moment in all your years of covering this. Right. Do you think this is the, because you said, and you said no. Do you think this is the biggest moment that you've covered in kind of the acceptance of gays in sports?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is it. This is him coming out is one thing, and him stepping foot on the field during a regular season game, and these are incredible moments of pride and joy, but importance is what I really focus on. And again, an NFL team in Missouri where that passed a marriage amendment more than 2-1 just 10 years ago, drafted, and is in the Bible Belt, drafted an openly gay player. It changes everything. It makes everything possible for gay people. And certainly, the big moments will be when he makes a roster and plays. These are all going to be super important moments. But the moment was when the NFL extended its hand and said, welcome aboard.
All right, that's great, Coop, because I was disappointed when you said Collins was at number one. So now I'm really excited. All right, like this is good, because again, I get to.
And you know what? I was right.
You were.
I was right. Collins was not the most important. Yeah. I mean, it was important, but it just who he was when it was just different.
Yeah. Well. All right. Well, you have to be tired. Go take a nap. You have earned it, for crying out loud. I've looked around. I can't believe you take the time to talk to me. I mean, this is you're
all
over
the
place.
I have to get up tomorrow at NFL AM broad is mm-hmm. tapes 3 to 7 a.m. in L.A. and yeah. I have to be there at 5. So, but you know what? It's too important. I want to talk about this, and I want to make sure that there are gay voices talking about this. I don't want straight people just sitting in a circle talking to themselves about it. So it's important to do it, and I appreciate you having me on.
I really feel like I won't be able to get the context on what happened until Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith talk about it tomorrow afternoon. So I'm not going to be until like I appreciate what you're trying to do, but until those guys weigh in, I just don't know. I am not going to know how to feel about it.
Get Bayless. Let's see if he drops a Troy Aikman reference.
Yeah, he's going to be tempted. All right, thanks, man. I appreciate your time. Great work as always. And seriously, I'm glad this has been such a positive experience.
Sure thing. Keep it up.
Cool. Thanks, man.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right, so thank you to Sid Ziegler, not only for answering all of my questions in a smart, funny way, but somehow doing his absolute best to follow that completely garbled, confused, 8 different themes going into one bottleneck question in the middle there and saying, I have no idea what you're talking about. There was a point there, and I eventually got to it, but, it's late in a Sunday night. Anyway, thank you to Sid Ziegler. You can follow him on Twitter at Sid Ziegler at CYDZEIGLER. So that was fun. This is the Will H. Experience podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Tuesday's guest is Richard Sandomir. He is the TV sports columnist for the New York Times. We're going to talk about the Olympics and sports cable networks and all sorts of fun business. All right. Thanks for listening. I'll chat with him and you. How about tomorrow?